Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plains Talkers Podcast. I'm your host, Will Benson, joined as always by the freaking 8-0 Esper Control nut job, Aramis Perez himself. Aramis, how are you doing tonight, sir?
For the second time in a row, I wasn't going to say anything, but you had to go and just sort of, yep, 4-0 again.
Of course I had to say something. I mean, well, you know, listen. Our fans want to know how you did and how I did. And I mean, I didn't have a terrible night. I mean, it was a night, and a bad night of Magic's better than a good day of work. Mm-hmm. But
spells were played, games were played, results were mixed.
I got a free pick. I got another pack.
Okay,
I did get a pack.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm good with the pity pack. I'm good. I like the pity packs, yo. But it was definitely a night. So, yeah, in fact, why don't we just get right into it? All righty. So, here's what happened. So, Friday night, I did decide to play Team Iraq. Mm-hmm. I put the deck together. I did tweak it a little bit for the room. I was planning on a lot of Esper Control, which I was not disappointed. I think there were, what, four or five of those?
There were three that I knew of, including myself.
Right. And, I mean, you know, I think y'all did very well, if I'm not mistaken.
So. One of them definitely got to top four. And I double-checked the standings afterwards, so I wasn't sure where it was afterwards because there was another player that was undefeated after the four rounds. I must have got him on tiebreakers because the Planeswalker Points website says I got first place. So,
no kidding.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I should actually check into that. I did two. I went 2-2. My first match was, I'm trying to remember. My first match, I did okay, I think. Oh, no, my first match I won. The guy had a brew. He had a red and black brew. Mm-hmm. And he just couldn't get anything off the ground. And at one point, I think you were sitting there when I got three reclamations out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just like, I'm just playing for explosion.
Yeah, he was playing, I think it was red, black? I thought it was mostly black.
It was mostly black.
Yeah, because he
had right. Actually, it might have been mono black.
Yeah, it was mono black because I remember he was playing like
mono black control.
Yeah, ill-gotten inheritance and stuff like that. Because I remember saying after the match is that he can't deal with enchantments, so it's just a point of you drawing your expansion explosions and, you know, melting his face. Although he did,
which is what happened?
He took a 25-point explosion and survived.
He did because he was getting a lot of extra points with that ill-gotten inheritance. I was keeping alive. Every time he got a creature out, I had an answer for it. I was gaining life in various places. I was doing okay. That was game two. Game one, I never got below 22. Mm-hmm. Like, he had no way to stop me. He was playing Mastermind's Inquisition. He played it both games, which I'm kind of like, listen, in sideboard, that card, I get Mastermind when you're playing BO1 or Duo Standard, which, you know, hallelujah, God bless America. Did I put it on here? I didn't. Darn it, I used to have taps on my other soundboard. But, I mean, adios that. But, yeah, he was playing Mastermind's Inquisition and bringing Duress in. I'm like, you'd be better to jam the four Duresses into your deck. Mm-hmm. And, you know, don't worry about acquisition at all. Because, I mean, every time he played it, I countered it.
Well, and the thing is, too, is like if he's fishing for a discard spell, he probably has four Duress in the sideboard that he probably would bring in after the first game. If he was playing, I mean, if he had splashed a little bit of blue, I mean, Unmoored Ego, he could acquisition for that really easily. But
yeah, Unmoored Ego, Thought Erasure would have been better for him as far as Surveil goes. I mean, just the mechanic alone. I don't know that I've ever seen anyone go mono black control in standard in some time.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where if you're going to play that, you're going to play five color black, and you're playing like Chromatic Lantern and things like that, so you can splash the best cards of every other color and just be like, you know, random Krasis just because, or random Nicol Bolas.
Right. I mean, he had some decent interaction. We had a good game, but I mean, like I said, I think he had me down to 12, and then it's like explosion, and then I got another one. It was like six. Thank you for playing.
Yeah,
have a good day. Game two, Game two was not pretty. Game two was mono blue. And
That
went about as well as you thought it would go.
I got lucky. I'll say this because I was talking to the other the person who was in the top four with Esper Control. He played mono blue 3 times.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't see it once, and I'm pretty happy that I didn't because it's a winnable matchup for Esper, but it's very difficult. I mean, there's a lot of thinking that goes into that. I mean, there's a lot of thinking when you're playing Esper, period, but having to play against a deck like Mono Blue, it's so strategy intensive and knowing when to pick your spots, and it's, no thank you.
Yeah, and that's what happened to me, Team Iraq. I was always 2 turns behind, really. There was just not much I could do. If I got rid of a Curious Obsession, he had another answer. It was really hard for me to keep anything on the board to answer him. Mm-hmm. So I lost that one. And then I think I went up against a Gate deck and didn't do very well either. No, it wasn't a Gate deck. What was the other deck I played? It was a Mono Blue was the one that really beat me up. And then
did you end up playing against the guy that was playing Gruul?
Yeah, it was one of those. No, I didn't play the Gruul. I ended up playing I ended up playing Esper Control.
Oh, yeah, you lose.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, you lose.
And I had the best shot against Esper Control. That's why I did Team Iraq. It's like it's got a good, it has a decent matchup. I didn't get the right cards at the right time. I had to mull down to, that was it. Both games, I didn't play Control. I ended up playing this kid's Simic deck, but I never saw. Oh no, green white. Sorry,
Selesnya.
It was a green-white deck. Wasn't really Celestia tokens, but, I mean, he was getting things out there so fast. Mm-hmm. And in game one, I had to mull down to 6. Game two, I had to mull down to 4.
Yeah, okay.
It was just like,
there's nothing you could do.
Nope. At that point, I'm like, any other time, I had him. I mean, I had plenty of board wipes in that deck. Mm-hmm. But then Mono Blue. But then I ended up playing the Gate deck that one of the kids was playing, or one of the students was playing from the club, and yeah, he didn't have a shot.
Right,
like it was just so. You know, I felt bad for him. I did. I told him, I'm like, you know, hey, what it is, what it is. You know, we're building this deck over time. Relax, but you know,
yeah.
Well, what about you? How did you went? What, 17-0?
It was 4-0. I only lost one game. That was actually the first game of the last round. I had a great night. It was there were some very tough games. I will say that. Round one, I played mono red, which they can blast you out of the gates really quickly. It was interesting. I was able to stabilize at about 6 life, and I had Kaya out. And this kid, I don't think he really knew what he was doing because he wasn't attacking my planeswalkers, or there were some turns.
Yeah,
where
you were telling me about that.
And there were some turns where he just didn't attack at all. And I'm like, okay, I'll take the extra life. And I think his dad was actually sitting next to him playing another match. And he said, oh, I forgot to tell him how to deal with planeswalkers. So what happens? Well, yeah, big whoops. So what ended up happening was, I was hanging in there. I was gaining a little bit of life with like absorbs and things of that nature. And then Kaya was gaining me a bunch of life. And then I realized that he had 20 cards in his exile pile and Kaya was at 6 counters. So I Kaya for 20.
Oh, jeepers, dude. That's just unfriendly.
And then game two of that match, Lyra Dawnbringer came out. I was at 7 life when she arrived, and he just had no answers. And usually, I mean, unless Mono Red can string together a couple of burn spells in a row, Lyra just takes over. And
unless you've got Experimental Frenzy out,
yeah,
and fully Experimental Frenzy with at least one Steamkin, you ain't got a lot of hope.
Yeah, I mean, no. Nope. So, yeah.
I mean, for Experimental Frenzy being out there, I mean, you still do it without the Steamkin, but the Steamkin lets you really...
Yeah, you could chain together like 6-7 spells in a row.
Keep that train going.
Yeah, I don't think he really knew how to play the deck that well, and I kind of crushed him, but that's what you're supposed to do in Esper Control.
And his dreams, I get it.
That's what you're supposed to do. So, round two, I played the Gates deck that one of the students brought. It was never close. Teferi ultimated both times, and that's all you need to know.
Well, I talked to him about that too. And the one thing he didn't do that I would have done, I said, okay, game one, absolutely. Mr. Perez taught you how to hang in. And even I said, okay, it's game one. You can hit eject. He didn't sideboard well for that. I'm like, no, I built this deck. You had sideboard cards that could handle things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, there are things you could have brought in there that could have, you know, helped you out. Like, I'm not going to help you sideboard, but I know the 15 cards that I put in there for the sideboard mm-hmm. were could be effective to at least help a little. And I told him, and then he's like, well, but he got the second Teferi, and the second game he got Teferi Ultimate. And I'm like, yeah, and you let him go. Mm-hmm. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, don't slow play, but you make him play it out.
Yeah, yeah, because like, you have to make the Esper player play their win condition if it's not Teferi. Because yeah. a lot, you know, some of the Esper decks, Teferi is their win condition. With mine, there's other win conditions. Like Kaya's a win condition. I have more win conditions out of the sideboard. I think I remember that second game. He was actually playing pretty well. He got some early creatures out, but I had plenty of removal. He got a Gate mm-hmm. Colossus out, and I was able to basically stall that long enough until I could ultimate, and then I just, you know, I exiled it as soon as I had a chance.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, he's learning.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good guy, and he's a real good player. I mean, I could say his name, Ricardo. I mean, he's a decent kid. He doesn't lose well.
No.
He does not lose well at all.
Most people like, don't, really, but yeah, I know what you mean.
We're working on that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, then I guess I'm a loser, because I try very hard to lose well, but I won't lie, that mono blue game, oh, I was getting pissed.
I could tell after the tournament that you were kind of tilted a little bit.
I was having a, you know, I was like, mother, oh, son of a bitch. So, you know, and it's like, and it's not even bad play. It was just, I got, in. I think the second game that had the milling me down to 5-4, playing against a pretty much a kid brew deck.
Mm-hmm. That's frustrating.
You know, and here I am sitting on tier 1.5 meta.
Yeah.
And it's like, God, oh, I can't catch a land. Are you
but that's,
kidding me right now?
But that's magic. Any deck can beat any other yeah. deck, but sometimes it just means you mulligan to 4, and that's why you lose.
Yeah.
But
it really was. It was frustrating. But I, you know, and I've been thinking about it, and I think you're right. I think I have to join the dark side at this point. I have a full Esper control deck. I have all the lands. I just need 2 Kaias. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Well,
and I'm like,
I don't even know if you
if
need...
you can't beat them, join them. And God damn it, I can't beat them.
I'll tell you this. I'll give you the list that I'm running. That list only runs 1 Kaya.
Yeah, you were saying that, but I like the thought of having... Because Kaya would be more of a win con for me than Teffy, I think.
Well, Kaya is basically the main win con for that deck, and it's kind of... The only other one of in the deck is there's a single Syncopate and a single Negate.
Yeah.
So.
Which is unusual
yeah.
for that deck.
But it's,
usually they want to run at least 1 or 2 of each.
No, yeah. I guess the way the article that I was reading, that the guy that built it, he's Esper Control is like his thing. He's like an Esper genius. He just does. I've got to find the article to give him proper credit, but he's on Star City Games.
Yeah, and you should send it to me so I can read
it. Yeah. and he's basically said, you know, this is probably right now the optimal list for what's out there and what could be coming up until the new set comes in. But it only runs the 1 Kaya in the main, and then its sideboard is when it brings in the Thief of Sanity, the Hostage Takers, things like that, depending on the matchup, to add more win conditions.
Well, most of them have sideboard Thief of Sanity.
Yeah, that's pretty standard. The Thief of Sanity and Hostage Takers are pretty standard. He runs a single Lyra Dawnbringer. A couple of notable omissions from the deck: there's no Eldest Reborn.
Really?
Yeah, none at all. It's too slow. For that deck, it's too slow, which is kind of weird. But yeah, it's too mana intensive for what it does. And unless you have complete control, it's kind of a win more card, because if you're casting it to get rid of a single permanent, you're better off just casting a Mortifier or a Vraska's Contempt.
Yeah, the problem is it handles Planeswalkers. The reason I like Eldest Reborn is it handles Planeswalkers.
Well, that's what the Vraska's Contempts are for.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You know, you raise a valid point.
And then, if you can't exile him, you just try to counter him or just kill them before that.
Right.
So, anyway, I'll finish the other ones real quick. Round 3, I played against an Orzhov control deck.
I played that deck.
It was interesting. It was a nice brew. I liked it because
It's Josh. Josh is he's just really good at what he does.
He was abusing the artifact that was, what the heck was it called? Like Tome of the Guild Pact.
Yes.
So he was playing a bunch of like Basilica Bell Haunts, and he played Kaya, things of that nature, to draw a bunch of cards off of the guild, the Tome of the Guild Pact, and just sort of lock down the game with that kind of control. Unfortunately, game 1, he decked himself because he had he had four tomes in play, and he just kept casting multicolored spells, and I just kept letting him resolve. So I'm like, go ahead. I'm piecemeal removing his threats one by one because he can't quite get to the next step against me. And I he told me afterwards I actually ended up exiling both of his Kaias, which were his win conditions. So he's just sitting there maybe trying to hope that I milled out first, but yeah, he drew way too many cards. And then game two...
Well, you're Teffy. You're not going to mill.
Yeah, and then game two, I had Teferi Ultimate pretty early, and there's nothing he could do. I had so much counterspell and removal. He was dead in the water. And then round four, I played against a white-red aggro deck, Brew. I lost pretty handily game one. I was close to stabilizing, but he had enough aggro to handle me game one. Game two and three was Lyra.
Lyra saves your bacon.
Lyra saves my bacon.
You only run one of those?
I only run one. I've
got two.
There's so much card draw, you're going to see her. I mean,
that's true.
And if you don't, you're probably losing that game anyway.
It's not a bad point. I've thought about main decking her, actually, because she is such a win con. But
I would say if you were going to main deck something, you might want to go old school and main deck like a Chromium or maybe like a Nezahal.
Problem with Chromium, I hate Chromium. I've always hated Chromium. Like, ever since he came out, you were smacking me around with him. Even then, I was like, you know what, as much as you smack me around, and yeah, sure, I can see it. I'm like, I just don't like it.
Well, I mean, I would say this. We have one more FNM before the pre-release.
Mm-hmm. It's the night before the pre-release. I don't know if I can go to that one.
No, it's the week before.
Oh, we're golden then.
Yeah, it's the night. The 19th would be the next time we're going.
Yep.
I would say if you're going to pick up Esper, start practicing on Arena now.
I am. I'm already up to gold too.
Yeah, so that way you can have a pretty good idea. But I'll send you my deck list, and that way by the time next week comes around, you should know what you're doing a little better. I'll send it to you right after the show.
Thanks, brother. And I mean, I really like to do well with that. I mean, I 3-1 was great. I still want to go 4-0.
Feels good.
I mean, we have had an impact. There's no doubt.
Oh yeah,
we had
21 people at that one.
It's not just that. When I say we, I mean I'm talking more about like even the club we're bringing in and stuff. It's like, I remember when we first showed up, they're like, yeah, not really a lot of. I mean, our guy Josh, he tends to brew his own stuff, and nobody's really playing meta. Like, he's like, we got, like, 8 or 9 guys, and some of them may walk in with, like, a meta deck, sort of. But for the most part, they're kind of, it's just kind of casual fun. And then, you know, I walk in, and I immediately start playing freaking Nexus.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, and I think were you sitting there when the kid was like, oh, God, it's you. Oh, you played against my friend. You had that Nexus deck. And I'm like, you know what? If your buddy is talking about it, and it's a month later, and you're equating it... We've had an impact.
Oh, yeah. And then I just stroll in and do two 4-0s.
Well, that's just it. It's like I'm taking a look at it, and I'm like, oh, you know, I feel kind of bad. I feel like they had this, like, great little culture there of, like, Friday night, you know, Smurfs singing, la, 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 la. And, you know, here we come in, and now we've brought, you know, the thunder. But
Teferi walks in and says, no, 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 no. This is not how you have fun.
I'm pre-ordering at least two of those. They're already at 20. They're going to go up. I'm going to get two. Even though I pre-ordered, did you order your box yet?
I did order my box.
All right, cool. You going to order another one?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know.
You're ordering another
one.
Of course you're ordering another
one. I cannot confirm or deny the existence of a second box.
Oh, do we have, yes, we may have ears on the pot. Yes, I agreed. Yeah, you should not order another one, Aramis. Do not order another one.
I definitely will not.
I won't order another one either. I'm just going to stay. Love you, honey. Please keep marrying me. Anyway. So
that ship may have
sailed. Yeah, that's our Friday night magic talk. And like, yeah, 2 weeks, I'll probably roll with Esper. You gonna stick with Esper or you gonna switch it up?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, don't blame me there. And plus, I mean, it's only gonna get better.
My God.
This should bring us actually right into, let's just get into, you know.
Main phase.
Okay, welcome to main phase. We'll start with the second thing first, but wow, War of the Spark spoilers.
Woo, boy.
Holy shitballs.
There
just Yeah, that's happened.
There, and it keeps happening. You're just like, they did this. I mean, and here's the thing: some of the cards that they've previewed, you're like, this card is not a competitive tournament Magic card, but holy crap, this is awesome! I can't wait to do this.
It is. It's just some of it's just. I mean, some of it's janky as. Forgive my language, folks. Some of it's janky as fuck. Like it just it is, but. Gosh, dang it! I love it.
Like there was, I'm going to talk about this one right away, just because when I was on Reddit and I saw the little thumbnail for the preview card and it said Perhelion 2, and I'm like, what the hell is this thing? I click the link, I read the card, and I'm like, what? What? Are you kidding me?
Wait, what?
This thing is stupid. I mean, it's not in a bad way. It's just it's okay. So it is a. Legendary artifact vehicle. Basically what Parhelion is, if you don't know the story, it's a freaking giant flying anvil manned by battle angels. How cool is that, first of all? That is freaking awesome. So it costs 6 and 2 white, so it's an artifact that costs 2 white mana. So it's technically a white artifact.
And it's a vehicle.
And it's a vehicle. It's a 5/5 with flying, first strike, and vigilance.
Cost 4 to crew.
Yep, 4 to crew. And then the part that just sort of made me scratch my head and say, what the hell are they? What are they on and where can I get some? Whenever Parhelion 2 attacks, create 2/4/4 white angel creature tokens with flying and vigilance that are attacking. What the crap? If you're in limited, if you're in sealed or draft, and you have this card, and you cast this card, and you don't win the game, quit now.
Well, you want to know what I can think? All I can think of is with this is that unless they're going to have to a core 20, because I'm sitting there going, well, you know, Settle the Wreckage can kind of take care of that a little bit. And then I'm sitting there going, oh, shit, Settle the Wreckage is rotating out. But I think I can't see them. I have a strange feeling. Settle the Wreckage seems like one of those cards that they might. That might go core because it's such a good card to it's a fair card. Yes, I've exiled all your creatures, but look at all the land you get. Mm-hmm. So
well, the thing I'll say is that they've costed it quite well at 8 mana. So this is basically one of those cards where you don't cast this unless it's late in the game and you're going to win anyway. Cuz this
unless you're playing green white.
Well, it doesn't convoke.
It's rampable, baby.
It's rampable. It's rampable. It's not really splashable though. Which is a good thing.
No, no. With the 2 white, it's
yeah.
You know, if it was a white and 7 colorless, this would be broken.
Yeah, it'd be crazy. I mean, it's still kind of nuts with some of the other cards in the set. I mean, because you can crew this with the new Gideon Planeswalker.
You can crew it with almost anything.
Yeah,
like it's yeah.
Well, because you can crew it then plus Gideon to make it indestructible.
Yep.
Yuck.
Yeah, yuck is right. I mean, for me, the biggest card that I've seen in the last couple of days, and I'm just madly in love with her, is, first of all, good on you, Wizards, for realizing that you've pretty much come to the end of all the, like, lore-ish sounding names, and they just go with Massacre Girl.
Well, that's Massacre Girl is a big character in the story. They've been asking for, the players have been asking for a Massacre Girl card for years, ever since the first Ravnica set.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I just figured they were like, we should call her Massacre Girl.
Nope. Yeah, she's actually a character in the story. She's some like crazed serial killer in the Rakdos clan, and
she's a human assassin.
Yep. And it was that one and Feather, which this is another card we'll talk about in a minute, and then another card we'll
Feather's
talk about.
Kind of great.
Fibblethip.
Yeah, but Massacre Girl, 2 black, 3 colorless. It is a 4/4 legendary creature.
Which is already
with menace.
Really good already.
Yeah. And, well, you know what? 5 for a 4/4 with menace, it's fair. That's fair.
And limited, that's already crazy.
Yeah. Now, I mean, but I'm talking constructed even. Okay.
Okay.
What pushes her over the top for constructed is the, when Menace Girl enters the battlefield, each other creature gets -1/-1 till end of turn. Whenever a creature dies this turn, each creature other than Massacre Girl gets -1/-1 until end of turn. So say you're playing a token deck.
Yeah, they did.
And say they have History of Benalia out, so you have some 2/2 you know, guys out.
They did.
Which, by the way, is curve. It goes with curve. Like, you're going to get history, but now you're out turn four.
Right.
Turn five. Okay. You cast this. She comes in and she does -1/-1 to the 3/1/1 tokens that are out there. That means that each of those negative, each of those creatures that died, as far as if I'm reading this correctly, that frickin' stacks.
Yes, it does.
So, okay, I killed 3 -1/-1 creatures. So everybody gets -3/-3 now. Yep. Oh, wait, I killed two more?
That's two more -1/-1. So if there's 3 1/1s and 2 2/2s on the board when you cast this, she can kill anything with a 7 toughness or less.
Oh, by the way, Carnage Tyrant?
Dead.
You too, buddy.
Yep.
Because it's a -1/-1. It's not even doing damage. You're indestructible? Anybody's indestructible?
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Yep.
It's like, holy, oh, what the?
And you want to know?
Wow.
You want to know the best part about this card? If you look closely at the art, on the faces and the bodies of the people that are around her.
Yeah.
Confetti.
Well, that, I just like that a little bit more now. I got to be honest with you.
There's confetti. She sprinkles confetti on her victims.
Oh, she's well, because you know what? It's a party. She's having a good time.
She is Rakdos to the core.
She's sprinkling glitter now.
It's like, oh, I just let your throat have a little bit of this.
So what do you think? Who's what about you? What's your next one?
Fibblethip.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go to Fibblethip.
Got to go to Fibblethip because he's
is that how
awesome.
You pronounce it? Because I've heard like a bunch of
yep,
different
it's,
tribes.
It's Fibblethip.
Fibblethip.
Fibblethip. Yep. Fibblethip.
Fibblethip.
Fibblethip the Lost. Fibblethip. Now, you may or may not remember Fibblethip from Totally Lost, which is reprinted in this set. Poor little homunculus, he always hated crowds. So he's lost. Nobody knows where he is. He's actually shown up as an Easter egg on a bunch of other cards. He's right. On March of the Multitudes, if you look. He's behind one of
he's
the
like
legs
a,
of the wolf.
What is he, like a Where's Waldo character?
Kind
of,
yeah. He shows up on little random things. He pops up on top of Nicol Bolas' statue on the Totally Lost art, which is just cute. And so Fibblethip the Lost is a 1/1 for 1 and a blue. He is a legendary creature, homunculus. When Fibblethip the Lost enters the battlefield, draw a card. He's already good. That's an Elvish Visionary. That's a great card. Mm-hmm. If it entered from your library or was cast from your library, draw two cards instead, which screams abuse. When Fibblethip becomes the target of a spell, shuffle Fibblethip into its owner's library. So it's kind of hard to kill as well.
Yeah.
I like this card because it's simple. It's deceptively powerful, and it's a great call out to the fans who have been clamoring for this card as well. They've been wanting a Fibblethip legend for the longest time. A little disappointed they didn't get their wish because they were hoping he was a planeswalker. But I like him because he combos very well with Bolas' Citadel.
Totally.
So,
well, I'm gonna take it to I'm gonna stay in blue with you.
Okay.
They one of the other planeswalkers they released. It's an uncommon, but I kind of dig her. Kasmina, Enigmatic Mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Spells your opponents cast that target a creature or planeswalker you control cost two more colorless to cast. Oh, and you get to create a 2/2 blue wizard creature token, draw a card, then discard a card. So I like that because there's nothing more blue than, okay, I'm going to make you pay to hit me. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to draw some cards.
Right.
So thanks for playing.
Yeah. I like what they're doing with the uncommon planeswalkers. I think a lot of them are they're enchantments basically that can be attacked.
Yeah, that's really what they are. And here's the thing: I mean, it's going to make games go longer because they're going to attack planeswalkers, which is not hitting your life total.
Hmm.
So, I mean, unless you're playing somebody who knows when to be aggressive and you know what planeswalkers to leave out there and not really care about,
right?
Like, you know. It's definitely, it's looking good. Another one, not that I want to take another one, but I don't think you'll hit this one. I really like Bolt Bend.
I was just going to do that one.
Oh, were you? Never mind. You do it.
You got it. I could pick another
one. All right, you sure?
Yeah, I could pick another one.
Okay. I mean, it's a four, it's a red and three colorless, and it's an instant unless you're playing the new Teferi, and then it's a sorcery. But, It's basically amazing. It says this spell costs 3 less to cast. if you can control a creature with power 4 or greater. And basically what it does is change the target of target spell or ability with a single target.
Yep. It's a deflection for one.
It's amazing.
As long as you got a big dude out, it's a deflection for one.
Right. This is just this whole set is just
so I'll jump back to the other character that I mentioned then, since you did since you stole that one from me.
Yeah, I feel terrible about that. I really don't.
Yeah,
notice I'm crying in my
Go on. So the next creature I'm going to talk about is Feather the Redeemed. This is another character that people wanted a card for her for a while as well. She is a for red and two white. This is actually really, I think this is really strong, really aggressively costed. She is a 3/4 legendary flying angel for one red and two white. So that's three mana for a 3/4 flyer, which is already really, really good. I mean,
really, really good. You're not wrong.
It's restrictive to cast, but if you're Boros aggro, you don't care. So the ability on her, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets a creature you control, exile that card instead of putting it into your graveyard as it resolves. If you do, return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. That is very, very good. I mean, you just think of certain combat tricks, Samut Sprint, +2/+1,
yep.
and haste, and then you scry. You get to do that every turn, and it replaces itself. It's free buyback. There's actually a someone that noticed a combo already in Limited. Not in Limited, but in Modern. And I think it's Aurelia's Fury. Let me see if I can find that real quick. So Aurelia's Fury is a card from Gatecrash, which is X, a red, and a white. It's an instant. It says it deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of targets. Tap each creature dealt damage this way. Players dealt damage this way can't cast non-creature spells this turn. So you cast this for one or two, I guess.
Right.
You target her with one damage. You target your opponent with the other damage. He can't cast non-creature spells. Aurelia's Fury returns to your hand at the end of your turn. Rinse and repeat. They can't cast non-creature spells for the rest of the friggin' game.
Yeah, exactly. That's just... I don't understand any of this.
This set is oozing with potential.
Well, I mean, the new Justice Strike. Well, it's Justice Strike on crack.
Oh, yeah, Justice
everything. Solar Blaze. Solar Blaze. Each creature deals damage to itself equal to its power.
And justice for all.
I'm like, ow? Mm-hmm. Ow. That's just, yeah. It's Justice Strike for everybody.
Everybody gets to punch themselves in the face as hard as they can.
It's liar, liar. What are you doing? I'm kicking my ass.
Do you mind? Oh, by the way, there is an infinite combo in Standard with this next set.
There's a few infinite combos.
Well, the one I'm going to talk about revolves around Ryle Storm Conduit.
Yes, go ahead. I'll let you have this one.
So this is a combo that, you know, a lot of times when people do combo decks, it's a lot of bad cards put together to make the effect.
Right.
This one, basically, you're taking Is It Drakes or Is It Phoenix, maybe pulling out the Drakes, maybe pulling out the Phoenix, and just plugging in Ral and throwing in a couple expansion explosions. So here's how it goes. Ral, Storm Conduit, Legendary Planeswalker, Ral, duh. He starts with 4 loyalty for 2 and a blue and a red, so 4 mana. His static ability, whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, Ral Storm Conduit deals 1 damage to target opponent or planeswalker. That's already pretty good, you know. It's sort of
that's
like
good.
Sort of like Niv-Mizzet a little bit. Shock you, ping you, do this, ping you, draw a card, ping you. That's fine. That adds up over time. His +2 is scry 1. His -2 is when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. The hilarious thing is, with this combo, his loyalty abilities don't even matter. You don't even care.
Nope.
Here's the combo. Ral, 2 copies of Expansion Explosion, and any instant or sorcery that can be copied. Doesn't even have to be yours. Say you cast Ral. You've got 4 mana untapped. You pass the turn. They go to Vraska's Contempt in response. You cast the first expansion targeting the Vraska's Contempt. Hold priority. Cast the second expansion explosion targeting your first expansion explosion. So Ral is going to trigger for both of those instants and sorceries.
Yep.
You let the first expansion explosion resolve, copying the you let the second expansion explosion resolve, copying the first expansion explosion, which makes a new copy of expansion explosion, which copies the second copy of expansion explosion, which copies the third copy of expansion explosion, which copies the fourth, fifth, sixth, and so on.
Yep.
Infinite damage.
Yep.
Basically, the next time your opponent tries to do anything that's not a creature, you win the game.
It's 20, yeah.
Yeah, it's 20. It's an arbitrarily large number. Because you don't have to stop it if you don't want to.
Which makes me wonder how the hell they didn't test that.
Well, it involves two copies of one card, plus Ryle, plus another card, and technically 8 mana. I mean, it could be as little as 5 if you untap, play a land, and cast an opt. That wins the game.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think that's the first time opt has been this deadly.
Well, let's choose one more piece here.
Okay.
Because we actually have some emails, so I want to make sure we give enough time for that.
I mean, I could gush about Teferi some more.
Yeah, no kidding. Teferi's just ridiculous. And, I mean, he is the most expensive right now, and he's at $22, and I think I have to order two. Because I'm hoping I get two in, like, my one box, hopefully two boxes. But I mean, because he's not mythic, I'm kind of feeling like I might get one.
Well, he's probably the best rare in the set, so
yeah.
You might see one every two boxes.
Yeah. So the card I'm going to talk about is it's really much more, I think, limited play. Mm-hmm. But I think in a super friend deck, which I think we're going to see super friends come back.
Yeah.
Mobilized District. It is a land that adds one colorless mana when tapped.
Yeah.
However, you can pay 4 colorless. Mobilized District becomes a 3/3 citizen creature with vigilance until end of turn. It's still a land. This ability costs 1 less to activate for each legendary creature or planeswalker you control. Mm-hmm. So let's say I have Niv and 3 planeswalkers out. So it's turn 7. Ow.
Yeah, it's a free creature.
I like it. And it's vigilant. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm going to hit you. Oh, and I still have mana to tap because it's also still a land.
You know where I see this, actually? I see this in Esper Control as their win con. Because you figure they're going to be playing the new Teferi. They're playing the original Teferi. They might still be playing Kaya. Possibly Jace, possibly some other combination of a couple other planeswalkers.
Right.
This thing's going to be free more often than not. And you only would really need to have maybe 1 or 2 copies because you're going to have so much to keep the way clear for this to go through to connect for damage.
You're not wrong. I never thought about it in Esper Control.
Yeah, I mean, even with Dovin.
Oh, Jesus. Do you have Dovin in yours?
No.
Okay.
Because there's no creatures. There's no creatures in the main, only creatures in the sideboard.
That's true.
I mean, he makes creatures, but I think it's... right now, that's just the slots are so limited. It's like, okay, you're putting him in, but you're taking something out that's probably better.
Yeah, I don't disagree. So what about you? What's your last one?
Oh, geez. I think I'm going to have to go with... I am going to have to go with Ral's Outburst. I like this card in limited.
I agree.
It is an instant for a 2, a blue, and a red. It deals 3 damage to any target. And then you look at the top 2 cards of your library, you put one of them into your hand and the other into your graveyard. It's a solid removal spell. It lets you filter a little bit.
And it's his +1 on his other planeswalker.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If you have the raw planeswalker out, it's an extra damage.
Yep.
Or if you -2 it, you can copy it. So
no, I mean the one from Gills.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, the plus. Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's
yeah.
His +1 ability on that.
His +1 on that. Yes, it is. So this is a solid set. This set is very good.
So far, so good. I mean, I've seen a few whiffs,
but
for the
most there's
part,
always going to be whiffs.
There's always whiffs.
Yeah.
I mean, yay, you brought Demolish back.
They tried. Okay. It looks like they tried to fix Flame Tongue Kabu again.
Yeah.
And they just
just
reprint it because it's actually not as good as it used to be.
No.
Although it's still crazy.
So, So the other thing I want to talk about before we go to main two and go to these emails is that it did come out this week. The Wizards kind of sat down and they put their heads together about the Mythic Invitational. And thankfully, and I don't think I'm the only one happy about this, but they pretty much said that Duo Standard is dead. Yeah, that just, I'm okay with that. On every single solitary level, I think that that was just...
I will say this, though. I will say this. It was definitely a good try. I think it went about as well as it could have gone for them, but I do think it's the right decision. I think that best of one, especially with those kinds of stakes, having it come down to possibly something of the coin flip or you mulliganed and then you all of a sudden you have to switch decks, you're already down a game. There's too much variance in a game that has a lot of variance already.
Right.
And I think competitive Magic has always been best of three. I think they need to return to best of three. You're really removing the aspect of showing them sideboarding. I think that's what makes the pros, because they're like, okay, I saw his deck. I know what he's played. He's played this and this. You know, they'll remember, okay, he's played two of these, one of these. It's these colors. I have this in my deck. This comes out. You know, seeing all the decisions that they make between games of a match, it doesn't take that long to sideboard. I mean, you're saving a lot of time with shuffling an arena anyway. So just go to best of three. I mean, it's there's no reason not to.
It really is. And again, if you're not going mobile, there's no reason to stay best of one at all, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. They want to do it. I mean, it's going to be interesting. What's really going to be interesting for me is that they also, the other piece of news is they invited all of the top, I think it was the top 8 or top 16, to the Mythic Championship in London.
Hmm.
So, oh yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I think it was the top 8. Well, I can double check that here looking on the web. But they did invite...
Well, while you're talking about that, I think something that's worth mentioning. Best of one is still great for Arena. They still should go to mobile, and they should still promote best of one. It's just that, you know, for the competitive game, it's best of three. So if you want to be competitive, it's the same thing. It just means you have to learn how to play the game properly. You know what I mean? If you
right.
want to, because a lot of the times, some of these Mythic, you know, some of the Mythic Championships, you're going to qualify through Arena, and if you do well at that, you qualify for the World Championship, which I'm pretty sure is still going to be paper, or at least part of it. So you're going to have to learn how to sideboard eventually. So you might as well just, you know, focus the competitive aspect of Arena as best of three. You can keep doing the rank grinding and all the other events. All the best of one stuff can still happen, because there is nothing better than sitting down for a 5-minute game, because you know you got time for one game and that's it.
So you don't play control on that one, right?
I don't play best of one anymore, honestly. Unless it's
really?
Unless it's draft. Yeah, I'm
trying to find it where they said they invited the top 8. I just know that they invited Mythic Championship. We'll keep going, though.
But yeah, I mean, that was basically all I was really trying to say. I mean, it's just, I think that they've hit a home run with Arena. I think it's the best thing to happen to Magic since Magic, to be honest. I think it's bringing in so many more players to the game from a completely, not completely, but an untapped resource, to pardon my pun. Because that was always their next step. They wanted to get into the esports arena. I think they've taken a good first step. I think the next thing, and they took another good step by saying, okay, we tried Duo Standard, didn't work as well as we'd like. The reaction wasn't quite what we were hoping for, so we're going back to the drawing board. The fact that they're able to acknowledge it and change it and fix it, hopefully, I really, that's kudos to Wizards for doing that. I think that they gave it a good shot, but it's time to try something else, and I'm glad they saw that and are willing to do that.
Yeah, I get that. And John actually agrees with you. Our number one fan, really. He's really our first fan. We're just going to call him our first fan. You know, he's agreeing with you. It's right on the screen there. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I don't disagree with you. It is nice to have that and be able to play it and, you know, hang out. It just, I don't like it for ranked. I don't like it for ladder. I just... Especially if it's going to count, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because it seems a little bit like, okay, I'm just going to play, I mean, jam mono red.
Yeah.
Or mono blue.
And that doesn't really teach you anything.
Not a thing. And that's just it. I've got it right here, actually. It was Eduardo Annunzieta said he tweeted out on April 5th, so last week. Mm-hmm. He said, I will be playing the Mythic Invitational 2 in London. Thanks, Wizards Magic, for this opportunity, and to all the other invitees, see you in London. And basically what it said is, last night I received a message from Wizards of the Coast informing me that the entire top 16 of the Mythic Invitational would be invited to play in the Mythic Championship 2 in London later this month. Hmm. What I love about this is they're bringing these people, and a lot of them, I don't know how many are streamers, I never went to look.
Well, Savich is one of them.
But it's like, yeah, I know, but it's like, how many of you played Paper Modern?
Oh, my God, that's right. Oh, wait a minute, though. Wait a minute, though. The Mythic Championship 2, that's...
There is the draft portion of it.
There's also...
There's the War of the Spark pre-release draft that's part of it.
The Magic. Oh, there's a Magic Fest at the same time. Okay, that's what it is. All right, so there's a Grand Prix happening at the same time as the Tabletop Mythic Championship. Well, that kind of... If I was a pro, I'd be like, wait a minute, I have to choose between these two? Can't I just do both?
Well, you can. I'm sure people are going to participate that go out of the Mythic Championships. But I mean, I'm just sitting there imagining, like, and I mean, there are some, and I don't mean to disparage anybody who's streaming and who's played. Like, I know MTG Nerd Girl's been playing Magic for a long time. Savich has also been playing since, like, 97. But, I mean, it's one of those things where I'm just sitting there going, imagining, like, you not only are you taking arena players who their triggers always trigger and their lands always tap themselves, and it's, you know, you're taking them and you're putting them not only in paper, but Paper Modern.
You know what?
It's like you're gonna see a whole lot of Izzet Phoenix because they're like, I know that deck.
The only thing it would be, I don't want to make it sound like I'm making fun of anybody because I'm not, but. It would be funny if one of them, just to try to do it as I told you so. I know I can play, and I'm going to show you. They walk in with Storm, having to remember how much mana they're floating, how many spells they've cast that turn, whether or not they're untapping. Oh God, that. But you know what? But best of luck to them. I mean, hopefully they have. They get some good deck choices. I mean, modern, you could pick up pretty much any deck in the format, practice it enough, and you could do well. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
You could do well. Well, we're gonna end our first main phase there, and we're gonna go right to combat.
In response, I'm casting Root Snare.
Yeah, we're ending combat. We're going right to our
main phase.
We're going to main two because we actually got this week. Emails. First of all, we've had a lot of response on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. You know, and to be quite fair, I mean, people will know. I mean, I put in an ad. I don't mind saying that because I wanted to get the word out on the show. So we did. And we've had some really great responses from it. We've got, you know, quite a few followers now. So I put up last night a post saying basically, hey, we record on Monday nights around 7 o'clock Eastern. You know, send us any questions for Ask Aramis or send us any emails that you want us to read. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read the first one first. And I know John is watching and waiting, and he was one of the people that emailed. So I'm going to make him wait a little longer.
Oh,
I'm just that guy. and then so this one is from Pat McFadden. Mm-hmm. He said, greetings. Name is Patrick, and with the War of the Spark, I'm coming back to Paper Magic for the first time since 2004.
Well, welcome back.
Let me do that again. Greetings. My name is Pat. God darn it, this beer. All right. Break that out. All right.
Wait a few seconds.
Greetings. My name is Patrick. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Greetings. My name is Patrick, and with War of the Spark, I'm coming back to Paper Magic for the first time since 2004.
Welcome back, Patrick.
Yeah, no kidding. You picked a good time, bro. Wondering how much of a limitation cost plays when it comes to deck building. Looking at certain mainstream decks, you see price tags of several hundred to even $1,000. For someone working on a budget, is that limiting, or is that a good motivator to build cheap solution decks for these monsters? We'll answer that in a second. Back in the day, I was limited in what I could spend, so I created a black-blue discard deck that was solely devised to make my opponent toss those high-priced cards right to the graveyard.
That's awesome.
I do. I like it, too. Thanks for a phenomenal podcast. Good luck on your matches this week, Patrick. All right. First of all, Patrick, thanks for writing.
Yes, thank you.
Aramis, I'll let you... You know, wait, no, because we haven't asked Aramis. I'm taking this one. All right.
Okay. You can take a crack at this.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't know when you got out. Okay, well, 2004. So was Standard a thing yet?
Yeah, that was right about the time that I stopped playing as well, because that was Darksteel, Fifth Dawn, Ravager Affinity.
All right, so, but there wasn't much Standard, right? It was still kind of sort of new?
It was still, Modern didn't exist yet.
Okay. Well, because here's the thing, Patrick. I mean, it's a little bit, it's funny, because if you go to MTG Goldfish, yeah, you know, the top decks, I mean, I think the most expensive deck out there right now, which is probably Esper Control because of Teffy.
I can tell you right now, $460.
Yeah. So the most standard of the standard decks is around, 460, 155, 218, 410. You can figure around $500. And where you're going to pay for that is a few things. Now, first of all, 2004, you might have a full set of Shocklands. And if you do, if you still have your old card. No,
Ravnica was after that.
You're right. Sorry. Yeah. Well, then you can't play those. the big kickers is, as far as Esper Control is Shocklands and Teffy, Teferi. Hero of Dominaria came out in the Dominaria set last summer, spring? Spring.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So he came out and... Oh, no. He queued Rotation, I think. So Dominaria. He came out and really took the format by storm. He's a blue-white with three colorless. That's what you pay for with that deck. For the most part, you can plan to spend anywhere from $83 for Mono Blue, which is just a monster. It was a monstrously good, powerful deck that kind of has lost its way a bit.
Still not a bad choice, though.
No, but you got to figure around $150 to $200 for a good standard deck. Now, the thing about standard is that a lot of the cards don't hold their value once they rotate out.
True.
I mean, and if you've been around since 2004, you're going to realize that. There are a few Arclight Phoenix springs to mind, like the cards that will get adopted into Modern. Teferi will always have some sort of money because of its being played in Modern until the new one comes out. And but
well, here's a quick question.
Yeah.
Question for Patrick, and hopefully he responds to us. Let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Does he still have his old cards?
That's a really good question, too.
Because if he has his old cards, there's
then
a possibility.
Be playing Legacy.
Well, he could possibly be playing Legacy, or if he's not interested in playing Legacy or Vintage and he wants to stick with Standard or even Standard or Modern, he might be able to sell some of those older cards for a pretty good penny and maybe sell a few old high-powered rares and be able to just pay for the deck itself without really having to spend any extra money.
Absolutely, and Aramis is 100% right on that. The Modern is really where money is. So if you're going to play Modern, that's where you're going to get into the $1,000, $2,000 decks.
Luckily, there's nothing in Standard that's over $500 right now, which
right.
is still a lot, but still.
It really is. And I mean, and I'm not going to sit here and waste your time and say, hey, there's always Pauper. You know, no, I get it. You know, some people don't want to play Pauper for whatever reason. I mean, the Is It Phoenix deck, which is the most powerful deck right now, even though I think it got nailed this weekend, didn't it? SCG, it did not win. It top forward. Amulet Titan took it down. Which is not surprising.
But Modern and Standard are both similar formats in that there's still a consensus. Well, in Modern, there's a consensus best deck right now, but they're both formats where you can pick a deck, build it, and it's competitive.
Yes. So, and that you're going to run anywhere from $5,000 to $2,000. Yeah. If the fetch lands are really what kills you there, 9 times out of 10 is the land base.
Yes.
You know, fetch lands are fetching a pretty penny. Some of the other lands out there that do crazy, stupid, dumb stuff. Tron's actually a pretty good deck to get into for under a grand. It's about $7.89 right now, so there's plenty to go by. But you know, since we here at the Planeswalkers podcast, the podcast by casuals for casuals, I gotta remember to put that in the beginning. You know, we focus mainly on Standard. So to answer your question to us, the Standard podcast, figure to spend around you know, 3 to 5 for a really, really tier one competitive deck. But I like your idea about brewing. And I love the idea that you may start breaking the code on War of the Spark. And believe me, there's a lot of code to break. There's even the possibility of you getting your mill deck back. But what's kind of funny is you're going to mill yourself. Mm-hmm. So,
well, here's what I would say might be a good thing for him to do. If he's starting out now with War of the Spark, first of all, attend the pre-release.
Absolutely attend the pre-release.
Find out if your local game store does Friday Night Magic. Especially if it's like a limited or like a limited format draft. If they do not Friday Night Magic, see if they have a draft night. Attend as many of those as you can. That way you can draft, you learn the cards as you see them, possibly get some decent rares, maybe win some packs. You can maybe trade some of those packs for maybe store credit or cash, sell them, buy the cards you need. Pick a deck that you want to build. Just do keep in mind that there is a rotation coming in a few months.
Yes.
So maybe pick a deck that might survive the rotation or go cheap so that when it does rotate out, you're not losing quite
yourself,
so much.
Yeah.
So I would say if you're going to start with something, either do mono red or mono blue. Those are your
or
two
Gates.
Cheapest options. Or Gates, yeah. Just because it's a cheaper option to get your feet wet in the metagame again. Once the rotation happens in September, October?
Yeah, September.
Everything's going to get turned on its head. A bunch of sets are going to leave the standard format. So,
and Rakdos is going to rule the world. Or not Rakdos, so, Cruel is going to rule
I'm not going to say that you're entering at a bad time. Just keep in mind that there is a rotation imminent. So as you make your decision on what deck to play, either pick something cheap or pick something that's more or less rotation proof that you can sort of build on a little bit at a time. Try to find cheap alternatives to certain cards. You're not going to be able to find them for all things. Like, there's no such thing as a replacement for a Planeswalker.
Yeah, or
just isn't.
And the other piece of advice I would give before we go to the next one, before we go to John, because I feel bad we're making a man wait, is play Arena. Go and download Arena. There are a bunch of codes out there to get you started with free cards, free styles. Which style? That's what we could have argued about with styles. Oh.
I thought we were.
But
dead.
Yeah, I know. But if you get into Arena and get the style or get the free cards and stuff, you can start building decks and start. That'll really let you brew, like to your heart's content, really, because you're gonna get some non-meta pieces of gossip. I mean,
it's also another really great way to basically relearn the game because a lot's changed since 2004.
Oh yeah, the
you
mechanics
can't put,
alone.
Yeah, you can't put damage on the stack anymore. Thank you, Arcbound Ravager.
I'm actually okay with that. All right, so let's do this. We'll go to our next email, and this is one of our what we'd like to become a format of the show. So folks, if you're listening to this podcast, email us at podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com. Wow, that's a lot of P's. podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com with the subject of Ask Aramis. Because Aramis has got some pretty decent skills as far as advice and things, the way to build decks. So if you have questions about building, about brewing, about what should go in, what he should jam in, what deck he should play, things, anything like that, Aramis is kind of a great cat for this. Eventually, I'll build a bumper with music. But for right now, we're just going to go to our Ask Aramis section. And our inaugural Ask Aramis letter comes from our number one fan, John Hill. And he writes in. So it's the Ask Aramis. I should make an Ask Aramis voice. Hello, guys. My question. No, I'm not going to do that. All right. Hey, guys. My question is for Aramis. And Will can totally chime in with his answer, too. What is your favorite color to play? Where your preferred colors are always competitive and have perfect fixing, what are you playing? And he actually wrote his answer. I guess I could do that. His answer, meaning John's, and feel free to omit this from the show, is Jund. I've always been hot for Jund. I've always been hot for Teacher, personally, John, but that's just me. The BRG color combo, black, red, green. I started playing Magic during the Innistrad Return to Ravnica standard and settled early on the current Jund list at the time, running Huntmaster of the Fells. Wow, there's Olivia Voldoran and Thragtusk.
Thragtusk.
Then moving into the Theros block, I kept the course with Jund Monsters and won my first tournament with a prize of 3 dual lands. Wow, that's
I hope you still have those, John.
Yeah, me too.
I want them. Never mind.
Stop it. You can't play him for them. Stop trying to steal the cards from our people.
Okay. But I want it.
You can't have it.
Fine.
All right, John says, I stopped playing regularly soon after that due to work not allowing me to have enough free time. Just do what we did, John. Bring your cards to work. All right, and coming back into Standard, your podcast is really helping getting a feel for the format and keep my thumb on the pulse of Magic so I can get back in the saddle. So thanks again for the content, and hope you guys keep it coming and continue to grow. John, I guarantee you I'm going to continue to grow. I'm apparently drinking things with a lot of fat content. So I will continue to grow and working my way through it. So thank you. But Aramis, so he has asked what your opinion is on colors. So make her away, toys. I mean, take her away, boys.
I don't really know how to respond to that. Anyway, so it took me a long time to think about this, really. And if it was a single color, I would probably say blue.
Dying of not surprised.
I think I'm a control player at heart. I like being able to really full disclosure, he wouldn't be doing this if he was playing Esper Control like I told him to do 2 weeks ago. Anyway, I like being able to sort of dictate how the game unfolds and being able to have answers to everything that you'd want to do.
You said dick.
They're going off the rails.
Oh, we're going off the rails. I'm so sorry. I'm never drinking this on a podcast night again.
Oh, God.
I'm so sorry. Moving on.
So, basically, blue by itself would be my favorite color. If I had to pick a color combination, it would be sort of a, depending on the format of the time, probably Esper or Orzhov or even Jeskai.
You have always been Esper, man. Since I've known you, you are always either Esper or, well, you had that, or the God Pharaoh's the blue white, or
that was,
or Azorius.
Yeah.
Like from the day I met you, from the first deck you built, it was you, which I still miss that deck because it was just a fun, now, janky deck to play.
But don't get me wrong. Believe it or not, right now my favorite card is actually Rekindling Phoenix.
Yes, I know.
Because I love the art for that card. I love the flavor of that card. And I love me a good aggro deck. Don't get me wrong. I'll play mono red. I'll burn your face off with the best of them. I love Stompy. You know, red green monsters. I loved that deck for the brief period that it was around about a year and a half ago. But I think at the end of the day, being able to sit back and do stuff during your turn and tell you what you're allowed to do is what I like to do.
Right. And I mean, you're really good at it. I mean, for me, I'm definitely more of a combo player. Mm-hmm. I like the little janky, like, again, I mean, I tell this story all the time. In fact, I told it on Reddit this week because somebody was talking about, somebody put up on the Arena site about the Famished Paladin. And I'm like, right. I love that deck. And he's like, this is so awful. And whoever plays this is a jerk. I'm like, no, you say that until you pull it off. And then you're like, mm-hmm. And it's really, I mean, I love those type of decks. And for those of you who don't know, Famished Paladin is a vampire that we've gone over it. Anyway, so for me, I do tend to like the Simic-y, and I think Naya, right? Naya's green, red, white.
Yeah, Naya's green, red, white.
You know, I tend to like those because they tend to kind of play together. Simic is nice green, blue. Usually it's green. Something with green, I just like the idea of ramp. I love the ramp. I love getting things out a turn or two before, which is why I loved God Pharaoh's Gift deck, too, was because it was kind of green, but not green. Like, you're like,
yeah.
I'm bringing stuff I should not be bringing out on turn four because we did this right. With that being said, I mean, mono red for me was always, you know, I do like to play a good red, too. I'm a big fan of the aggro and put my foot on the gas and just drive, you know, and keep it going. But in this meta, unfortunately, I'm gonna have to learn how to play a little more control these days. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, too, I like Ramp. I'm a little more old school. I'm not as big a fan as Green Ramp as I am of Artifact Ramp.
Yeah.
Because you could put that ramp into blue or green True. Or white or red, you know, and being able to do ridiculously powerful things two or three turns before you really should be able to. There is something about that.
I wonder if they'll ever get back to that. I mean, I got to imagine we got to go to Phyrexia for that to happen.
No, you're never going to see artifact mana like that ever again.
Yeah, you know what? You said the same thing about Shocklands a year and a half ago. Don't give me that crap. You don't know.
I called Shocklands.
You called Shocklands right before they did it. But a year and a half ago, you're like, they'll never reprint Shocklands. I'm like, okay. You're like, I wish they would. I was like, cool. And then you heard about Ravnica. You're like, oh my God, we're going to get Shocklands.
Well, that's the thing. It's like my whole stipulation was that if they don't go back to Ravnica, they're not doing Shocklands because Shocklands are Ravnica.
I agree.
So as soon as they announced Ravnica, I'm like, well, here come the Shocklands.
And John feels that I should mainboard Cindervines. Don't give in to control. See, John's on my side on this one. But no, I just it's tough because, I mean, I do need to play the Gruul midrange deck. I did build it. And that does seem a deck more suited to me. It's just in that room on that night, on a Friday night, I don't think it hangs. I really don't think it hangs in a room with two or three Espers. It just, things can go.
Well, the biggest thing with the Gruul aggro deck is you have to get under their counter spells.
Yeah. And that's hard. It's basically Call of the Wild. And if I can't get Call of the Wild out and manage to keep it alive because they can mortify it. Like, that's just it. It's not like even Call of the Wild isn't going to save me because.
And I think this is probably the biggest reason why Esper Control is as good as it is that when most people think of a control deck, they're thinking of someone sitting back countering everything you do. This version of Esper doesn't really do that. It just sits back and kills everything you do.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's just removal. It's
got so much removal.
I almost want to call it Esper Tempo, not Esper Control. Like, is it
no,
just
it's control?
I know. It seems like that way, but you know. So that was our Ask Aramis section. John, I hope this is great. He's been listening with us, so really great. Thank you. Write in next week. Give us something else. You know, be glad to help you put together, you know, something or whatever. But with that,
it's got islands in it.
Shut up. But I think with that, we do have, you know what? I'm going to tease it. I'm not going to talk about it this week. We do have the big announcement. It is happening. We have an announcement about War of the Spark. We will be involved in something with someone. And we're not going to get into too much detail here yet. I want you guys to tune in next Monday when we do our recording where we will 100% give this out. But we have a big announcement about our role in War of the Spark. We're actually going to be doing something a little bit different than we would normally do than just a normal weekly podcast. We will maintain our weekly podcast, though. But, you know, with regards to pre-release, we're going to have some, we have some interesting news for that. So that'll be next week. So you're going to have to you guys are going to have to come back and listen to the show next week. But as I'm now getting the notifications on my watch that I am tired and want to go to bed and everybody else is, so get off my computer, you dozo. I think it's time to end the show.
Okay. So,
well, we're at 108 anyway, so we went a little over, but, so let's go ahead and take it right into it.
End step.
So here we are. We're picking up our cards. We're putting them in the boxes. And we wanted to let you guys know how to find us through the various interwebs, should you wish to find us at any point during the next week. Both Aramis and I stream Arena and any other game we want to play on the Planeswalkers Podcast channel on Twitch. Just go to Twitch, look up Planeswalkers Podcast. And actually, what we do is we actually stream from our own, and it kind of goes there. So you can find me on Twitch at MindCrime73.
Yep, and if you are on Twitch, you can also follow me. I'm on Twitch at RMECWRX. If Twitter's more your speed, I don't have a Twitter account, but the podcast does. The podcast has a Twitter account. I don't have a personal one. You can find our show at PlanesTalkerPod on Twitter.
And my personal Twitter, because I do have one, and I had one from like year one, man. This is why I have this. I have at WR Benson. And of course, guys, listen, as we spoke of earlier, you can totally follow us on Facebook. Just look up Planeswalker in the search menu or go to facebook.com/planeswalker. And please, while you're there, like and follow our page. And go to iTunes and subscribe to us. If you're on iOS, Google Play Store, or anywhere else, you can subscribe to the podcast. If you are on iTunes, I'd really, really love to ask you guys to leave us a review. It does help like with the visibility of the show.
Yes, reviews are great. We want reviews.
Especially if they're positive. If they're negative, keep it to yourself.
Wow.
I'm kidding, but email us first.
Yeah, if you're going to yell into an email, and that way, you know, we can yell back and then block you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But finally, you can send us emails, like I was just saying. Look at that.
Yeah, see?
Look at
that, man. It's like I've done this before.
And you can even ask for advice on our Ask Aramis section. Hopefully, we get some more emails on that. I'll offer you advice and tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. If you are going to send us an email, the address you can use is podcast@planestalkerpodcast.com.
And with that, folks, we are going to back on out of here. This has been a great week. We want to thank you guys for listening. This is the Plains Talkers podcast, a standard podcast by casuals for casuals. We will be back recording next Monday night around 7:38. Tune into our Facebook page or listen to us on the podcast, however you do. But for Aramis Perez, my name is Will Benson. I want to thank you guys and remember to never leave all your lands tapped. Have a good one, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.